From WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Good morning, I'm John Hingsbergen, and today we planned for a week or so to have this conversation about the effects of the government shutdown on the state of Kentucky, knowing full well that the shutdown could be resolved because today is an important date related to the federal debt limit, debt ceiling, and so forth. And, of course, that is the case. As of last night, the United States Congress and President Obama enacted legislation that extends the budget to January, I believe, and the debt limit into February. We'll get some more details from our guests as we get into this morning's program. And we want to welcome two folks who are on the line with us right now. We have actually a current member of the House of Representatives and a former representative from the state of Kentucky. First up, we have Representative Andy Barr, the Republican elected for the 6th District last year, defeating the incumbent Ben Chandler. Andy Barr, thank you so much for making time to be with us today.
John, it's good to be with you.
I hope you can stay around for a little bit, and we're going to ask you to interact with Mr. Ken Lucas. Since 2009, Ken has been commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs. Formerly, Lucas was a congressman representing the 4th Congressional District from 1999 till 2005. Ken Lucas, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us. Let me first, because Andy Barr is the current representative and seated in the House of Representatives, get your opinion, Mr. Barr, of what has gone down in the last couple of days. Am I correct in understanding that you voted against the compromise bill last night?
I did, John, and I did because I fundamentally believe that it is unfair to my two daughters and to future generations of Americans to simply raise the debt limit without reforming our government or without doing anything substantive to get our spending in Washington under control. Of course, I agree with the president when he says we need to pay our bills. I agree with the president when he says we need to avert a default. But you have to remember that raising our debt limit without making any reforms whatsoever is not paying our bills. It is just asking China, our bondholders, and other creditors to pay our bills for us. And so, look, I'm ready, willing, and able to work hard going forward with this president, just like I was in the last several weeks, to negotiate a fiscally responsible settlement of these discussions, but which incorporates important spending restraints, important spending reforms that will actually put our country on a path towards fiscal solvency and avoid national bankruptcy.
Are you glad that the government has reopened and that at least the two houses, minus your vote, were able to push this legislation through last night?
Well, of course I'm glad that the government is reopened. I've voted over 26 times to open the government, to fund the government, to otherwise avoid a shutdown. And in fact, I'm glad that Congressman Lucas is on the line, and I appreciate his service, not only in Congress, but also in Frankfort, and particularly for service to our veterans. And I was very proud to vote for multiple measures to not only fund our military, but fund our veterans and make sure that those services were not interrupted. Regrettably, those bills sat on Harry Reid's desk throughout the shutdown. And, you know, we have our political battles in Washington. We have our political disputes. But our veterans and our military should never, ever be used as political pawns. Fortunately, we were able to achieve some bipartisan shift during the shutdown and before the shutdown to make sure that payments to our military were not interrupted. But regrettably, not all of those bills were passed, and some of those bills for our veterans, again, just sat on Harry Reid's desk. And one of the real regrettable episodes during the shutdown was the administration's closing of our memorials. We had honor flights of our World War II veterans who came to Washington, some of them 90 years old in wheelchairs, and the administration, for political reasons, closed the open-air memorials in Washington, and that's just not right.
Representative Andy Barr is on the line with us. We're going to speak here in just a moment with former Congressman Ken Lucas. As we remind you that Eastern Standard is an interactive program, you are welcome to send your questions, your comments for our guest by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. That email address again, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Our phone lines are open at 800-621-8890. Because we have our guests on the phone lines at the moment, we're unable to take any listener calls live on the air. But if you have a question you'd like to relay, our phone screener, Julie Tennell, will be glad to forward your question, or you can call in later during the program, 800-621-8890. Ken Lucas, we had planned to have you on here to talk from the point of view of your agency, the Office of the Department of Veterans Affairs. But since we are here with the current representative from District 6, can you give your assessment? I know you're a Democrat. Mr. Barr is a Republican. Your assessment of the actions last night and this week?
Well, it's when it was notified yesterday you wanted to talk to me today about any deficiencies to the veterans. You know, I knew it would be over because that's the way Congress operates all the time. I found that out from the 6 years that I was there, you know, that it would be settled. And Leader Boehner said, you know, that he would not let, you know, the country go into default. So it was a matter of who would blink first. And, you know, this is the outcome.
Do we consider this a victory for one party or the other, Mr. Lucas?
Well, I think, as the president said, nobody wins in a deal like this. The economy was hurt by some economist estimates of $24 billion, and it was really unnecessary that we had all this to start with because, you know, as Representative Barr said, well, there need to be some fiscal house in order, but actually this thing was all about trying to impede Obamacare. That's why it all happened.
Mr. Barr referred to your current position as Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs. So, Ken Lucas, what has been the impact on veterans? Was there an impact of the almost 3-week shutdown?
No, not to our operation. There really wasn't. And the irony of this is, you know, at the federal level, the claims for veterans for disability and pension disability have been slowed up because of the backlog of claims, a lot because of Agent Orange that happened during Vietnam, and they went back and started paying those claims. And in this bill that was passed last night, there's additional money in there to get more help for the Veterans Administration in Washington to pay claims so they can speed them up. So it's kind of ironic, but it turns out of all this, that we're getting more money to speed up the claims of the veterans.
Representative Andy Barr, again, our topic of the program it was originally intended and remains the impact of the federal government shutdown or partial shutdown on Kentucky. How would you assess the impact on Kentucky? I know the governor has some very strong feelings about it, which he's going to share with us later in the hour.
Well, Mr. Lucas is right that Obamacare was obviously a topic that dominated during the shutdown, and obviously there's a lot of passionate views on both sides of that subject. But I think the relevance of Obamacare maybe wasn't effectively communicated. But the truth of the matter is Obamacare is a spending bill. It's a massive increase in federal spending. The Congressional Budget Office projects that Obamacare will cost American taxpayers nearly $2 trillion over the next 10 years, and it's the cost of Obamacare has doubled since the president originally claimed that it would reduce the deficit. And the cost of Obamacare will continue to grow as some of the mechanisms to finance Obamacare, which are very unpopular and very, frankly, politically unsustainable, like the medical device tax, like these deep cuts to our rural hospitals, cuts to Medicare, those are going to go away. And so when we look at our budget situation in Washington, we cannot we cannot ignore the huge, massive new costs that we're imposing on the American taxpayers with Obamacare. Now, in divided government, nobody gets everything they want, and I understand that. And I am hopeful that now that the shutdown is behind us, that both sides can come together in good faith and actually negotiate. The problem that we had in the last several weeks is that despite the efforts of those of us in Congress to get a modicum of reforms to our spending practices, we could not persuade the president to actually sit down and negotiate with us about the enormous fiscal challenges facing the country. And so, I would just go back to the point that, yes, of course, we need to pay our bills. Yes, of course, we need to avert a default. I'm ready, willing, and able and prepared to do that. In fact, I voted for raising the debt ceiling back in February, but I did so in conjunction with fundamental reforms of the way Washington operates. And the people of Madison County and Fayette County and Central and Eastern Kentucky, when they elected me, they asked me to go to Washington to not do business as usual. They asked me to Washington to finally make the reforms, the tough decisions, to force the government to finally live within its means. And just simply kicking the can down the road one more time is not fundamentally changing the culture in Washington and will do nothing to prevent a bankruptcy of our country.
Representative Andy Barr, I know you've been traveling this morning. I guess, are you back in Kentucky from having voted last night?
Yeah, John, we just landed back in Kentucky, and I'll tell you, it's great to be home. It's been a tough 3 weeks in Washington. It's always good to be back in Kentucky. I can't wait to see my little girls. And you know, that's what this fight was all about, is trying to fight for future generations of Americans so that they are not saddled with mountains of debt.
Are you able to stay on with us past the station break that we're going to take in about a minute, or do we need to let you go?
Sure, I can stay a little bit longer.
Okay, excellent. Because we are going to take a station break in just a few minutes, we want to invite our listeners to send questions or comments for Representative Andy Barr, former Representative Ken Lucas. We have a guest in the studio that we'll introduce in just a few moments. We're expecting to speak with Governor Beshear at about 11:30. I think we have another guest on the phone whom we'll be speaking with in just a few minutes as well. We're talking about the effects of the government shutdown or the partial government shutdown on the state of Kentucky. 800-621-8890. Please be prepared to pass your message along. We'll relay that to our guests. Or send your message by email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at wekuest. That email address again, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. The phone number, 800-621-8890. More of Eastern Standard in a minute on WEKU. This is Eastern Standard on 88.9 WEKU. Good morning, I'm John Hingsbergen. Our time is 11:20. We're talking about the effects of the government shutdown on Kentucky. And with us on the line for the next few minutes is Representative Andy Barr, representing the 6th District of Kentucky, and former Representative Ken Lucas, who is now the Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs. And I want to at least introduce Mike Manchett, who is a Travel Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Travel and Tourism. As a result of the government shutdown, several federal parks in Kentucky were closed, including Mammoth Cave. And we will ask Mike about the status of the parks and maybe what occurred during the last 2.5 weeks. But first, let's return to Representative Andy Barr and to Mr. Lucas. Mr. Lucas, again, because we do have the two Democratic and the Republican Party both representative in our conversation, do you have any reaction to what Mr. Barr has said about his concerns about the debt limit and
Here's the thing. When you talk about Obamacare, you know, historically, Social Security was very unpopular with the other party. Medicare was very unpopular with the other party. Medicaid was very unpopular. And now these are staples in our economy. And, of course, we're going to have to adjust them. So, you know, people, so we can live within our budget. But I predict that Obamacare will be just like these programs. And what is being left out is, instead of repealing this thing, is to change it and to work with it through the years, make adjustments, make changes. And they're talking about the huge cost of Obamacare. Well, it hasn't even been implemented yet to start increasing the cost. They're saying it's doubling and tripling, and the thing hadn't even gotten started yet. So I predict in 3 years, Obamacare will be a big hit. There will be many adjustments to it that will get it in line, and I'm sure there are lots of things that need to be adjusted. But it'll be a wonderful thing for all the many millions of Americans who don't have health care. And the other fallacy about this, that 85% of the people that we have in this country have health care, and they're not going to be affected by it. It's just the 15% that isn't going to have health care that will be affected by it.
Let me toss out this comment from a listener. Eugene from Barbersville called in. Politicians keep saying that Obamacare is going to raise costs, but what about the cost already associated with hospitals treating uninsured patients? Doesn't that raise the cost of health care already? That message from Eugene from Barbersville. Mr. Barr?
Well, yes, of course, and one of the concerns that we have about Obamacare is that it includes deep cuts to our disproportionate share hospitals, our rural hospitals, and that's really the problem we're facing. We don't have unlimited resources, and so when we talk about the popularity of Medicare and Social Security, that's true, and that's wonderful, and you know what? Retirees and seniors have earned their Social Security benefits and their Medicare benefits. The problem is that the government is going to start breaking its promises to seniors when they start to retire. The trustees of Medicare say that within 12 years or so, Medicare, the Part A, is going bankrupt. And so it's not a question about whether or not we want people to be able to have retirement security or health care security. We do. But we just want to make sure that the government can keep its commitments. And we have a huge unfunded liability in both Social Security and Medicare right now. And it's not an ideological or philosophical thing. It's not a Republican or Democrat thing. What it's about is math. It's about simple mathematics. And there is not enough money to fund all of these programs all at once. And so what I would say is look, I want health care security for everybody. I want retirement security for everybody. But what we don't want to do is have the government make promises to everybody and then break those promises. What we want to do is force the government to start living with it in its means so that when people retire, when people need health care, the government can actually deliver on those promises. And regrettably, you see Obamacare raiding Medicare right now and in the near future when Obamacare is fully implemented because there's just not enough resources right now. And, in fact, we've got a $17 trillion national debt and huge unfunded liabilities out there. What we want to do is make sure the government can keep its promises.
Okay. Mr. Lucas, one final comment question for you. Mary from Lexington asks that both the Democrats and Republicans stop exploiting veterans to make political points. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that the parties have been exploiting veterans?
Well, I think this thing with the World War II monument has been totally exploited. Number one, the Republicans caused the shutdown in the first place, and then they're blaming it being closed. But ironically, if you check into it, initially when a group went up there right after the shutdown, they were barred from it. But after that, the barriers were removed, and in recent days, none of the World War II veterans have been denied going into that place. So it's kind of ironic that the Republicans are blaming the Democrats for that when, in fact, they're the ones that caused the shutdown in the first place.
Ken Lucas is Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs, formerly representing the 4th Congressional District from 1999 till 2005. Thank you, Ken, for being with us today. And Andy Barr is the current representative for the 6th District. And took part in the vote last night to reopen the government. You say you're not 100% happy with it. You voted against the bill that was on the table. Where do we go from here, very briefly?
Well, I am still hopeful that with the principled stand that we took in the House to try to finally force some fiscal responsibility on this country, to stop the Washington spending spree, to raise the the level of this debate to point out that it's unfair to future generations of Americans to keep kicking the can down the road, to keep raising the debt limit without any major reforms to our overspending, that hopefully the president will finally see that he has to negotiate and compromise with the House of Representatives, and finally confront these major challenges facing our country, hold Washington accountable, and start the process of preventing a debt crisis and preventing America from going bankrupt.
Representative Andy Barr, thank you for giving us some of your time this morning. We know you're very busy, and we hope that you'll have plenty of time to interact with your constituents now that you're back in Kentucky.
Thank you so much.
This is Eastern Standard on WEKU. Our phone lines are open at 800-621-8890. We invite you to email us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. In just a few moments, we hope to hear from Governor Steve Beshear, who's offered to give us about 15 minutes of his time, and we hope that we'll be able to get some listeners on the air with the governor. Mike Manget, we've introduced him. He's Commissioner of Kentucky Department of Travel and Tourism. And let me also introduce on the phone line, do we have Lieutenant Colonel Kirk Hilbrecht also on the line? Lieutenant Colonel, thank you for being patient with us.
Yes, no problem, John. Glad to be here.
Let me, since you've been waiting patiently, ask you briefly to tell us the impact that the government shutdown had on the Kentucky National Guard.
Yes. Well, obviously our mission is dual purpose. We have both the state and the federal mission. The state is to be ready, reliable, and relevant whenever Governor Beshear calls upon us to take care of whatever kind of disasters in our way, whether that be man-made or otherwise. And, of course, on the federal level, whenever we are called, we're in a reserve capacity, but oftentimes working side by side with active components overseas. This shutdown was part of, for us, was a second blow in the same year as we were also facing the constraints of the Budgetary Control Act. And we actually had to put 1,500 Kentucky National Guard full-time troops on furlough. And so, over the past 16 days, many of us have had to basically hold our breath, not knowing whether we were going to get paid or we would be actually brought to duty.
So these troops were on duty, but furloughed, unpaid?
That is correct. Because of the National Guard having that dual status, oftentimes we are paid by different ways. And in the case of the military technicians and those that were also on full-time National Guard duty, we were not paid or we were actually furloughed.
All right. Let me ask Mr. Manget about the travel and the parks. I know, again, the federal parks, the national parks in Kentucky were affected during the shutdown. What is the status overall of those parks? Are you aware of that? Are they reopened this morning?
Most of them have reopened. It was a significant impact. You know, when you look at travel and tourism and compare it to things like the National Guard or veterans benefits, you know, a lot of folks will look at it and say it's not quite as important. But what the real importance of travel and tourism comes down to is the economic impact of closing those parks. I know one of our local businesses around Mammoth Cave, a hotel, had to reimburse the earliest figure I heard was about $3,000 in deposits from people that were coming in that canceled their trips because the park was closed. And nationally, the U.S. Travel Association estimated that it cost $152 million in economic output daily during the shutdown of closing the national park. So it was a direct impact on our citizens. You know, the inaction in Washington does have consequences, and that's what you saw here. It hurt our economy. October is a great time for travel and tourism in the state and is one of our biggest months, as a matter of fact. So it's going to have an impact.
What about recovery? Is there going to be a time of a transition now that to get things reopened and to reestablish the tourism that the state would expect?
No, I don't think so. They'll ramp up, be back up to full staffing very quickly. The problem is you've lost the window of travel. A lot of fall breaks. A lot of schools are on fall break right now, made other plans. We were able to keep some of that by diverting them to the state parks that remained open and other state attractions. But, you know, it's just, you know, when people change their plans and cancel, they're going somewhere else. So that's lost revenue for us.
Is anyone making projections or guesses about the total loss of revenues for the state's economy?
Not right now. We'll do that when we do our economic impact analysis. It'll show up then. That comes out in the first part of next year.
Lieutenant Colonel Kirk Hilbrecht of the Kentucky National Guard. So where do you all stand right now? Your folks are going to get paid, and things are returning to normal today?
Well, I wish that were the case. I mean, obviously, when you turn that off something as significant as an 8,500-person organization, whether it be a company or, in this case, the National Guard, it takes a second or two to turn things back on. And right now, we have been spending, obviously, the last 16 days trying to figure out what we were going to do because we've had to cancel military drills, which, again, are our time to get ready for man-made or natural disasters. So we really are in a double time trying to get ourselves ready for any kind of emergencies that may be happen. At the same time, however, we're also helping our service members who are coming short on being able to pay bills, trying to get them relief from the creditors and other folks that have been hounding them for payments, because in many cases, those 1,500 people, even though they are promised to get paid, do not have a paycheck right now.
Here's a note from a listener. Thomas from Lexington makes the point that Americans are undertaxed, especially the wealthiest Americans. He is from Sweden and asks that we look at that country and others from Western Europe, where they have some of the highest taxes but also have a higher standard of living, including free health care and education. Everyone pays their share, and there is less poverty and higher standard of living. Sorry, we do not have our representative and former representative still on the line, because I'm sure each of them would have an opinion on that. Mike Manchin, any sense of the impact of the tax rates in this country and in Kentucky on our quality of life?
Well, I think Kentucky's tax structure being as low as it is right now actually helps the business community, which generates jobs. So there's always a balancing act there. And, you know, some states don't have a personal income tax but have higher sales tax, et cetera. And I know there's been a lot of talk through the Governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on tax reform about some options to do that. But I'd like to go back to Colonel Hilbrecht's point about the impact on his staff members. And that, you know, that trickles down into our industry, because if his furloughed soldiers, men and women, aren't getting paid, of course, their priorities go to paying rent and everything else. But that's also opportunities for them to do trips, eating out in restaurants, et cetera, that impact our travel industry. So you know, it's not just about closing parks as it relates to us. You know, we're the third largest industry in the state of Kentucky. We're $12.2 billion annually. And when you take about 2 weeks out of that, it's a major impact, and that's the frustrating part for us on the state level, is what is happening or isn't happening in Washington. It has a direct impact on our citizens.
Colonel Hilbrecht, thank you so much for your time with us this morning, the Communications Director for the Kentucky National Guard. We're going to clear the line for Governor Beshear. Thanks for being with us. And let us now welcome Governor Steve Beshear to our program. Thank you, Governor, for being part of this week's Eastern Standard on WEKU. Hello, Governor Beshear. Apparently not there. Well, we do want to invite our listeners to interact with us, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Governor Beshear, we understand, was traveling from an event in Louisville, and so perhaps drove through an area where the cell phone signal has gone down.
He's back on. I'm with you.
You're back. Excellent. Governor, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. You know, I'd like to say that cell phone service is 100% in Kentucky, but unfortunately, it's not yet.
You're checking that out for us today. We know you were at an event in Louisville. Is that correct?
Yes, and now I'm on my way back to Frankfort.
Yesterday, you called a news conference to speak about the government shutdown. I know you were fully aware of the fact that it could have been over within hours, which it was. You had some very strong words for our federal legislators. Tell us what your message and your feelings about this, the resolution of the partial government shutdown at this point.
Well, first of all, thank goodness that enough of these folks finally came to their senses to get the government back up and running, and to avoid having us default on our debt around the world. Quite honestly, I've been frustrated, disgusted. You sort of named the derogatory term, and I think I could buy into it, and I think that most Kentuckians and most Americans have felt the same way. This is no way to do business. You know,
it amazes me that we continue to pay these folks to go up there and act like a bunch of kids in the cafeteria having a food fight instead of sitting down like adults and working through these things. You know, what we ended up with, which at least got the government running and pushed the debt ceiling problem off, but that's all they did. They basically kicked the can down the road again for about 3 months. And they could have done that 3 months ago. You know, we're at the same place we could have been 3 months ago, and instead they manufacture this crisis, maybe so they can say they saved us from it and accomplish something. But it's just disgusting to watch this display of childishness in Washington, D.C.
How do you feel the shutdown affected the state of Kentucky? Mike Manjot is here. Travel commissioner says that we don't quite know the economic impact on travel and the overall economy. Do you feel that the state was hurt?
Sure, the state was hurt. I mean, just folks knowing that they couldn't come and get into some of the national parks that we have. I do know as a fact that we had just finished building a new facility in Glasgow for our aged population with behavioral disabilities. We were just ready to move them in from this old dilapidated structure that we've had for lots of years. And the last thing to do was to have about a two-day licensure process, and then we could move those folks in. We couldn't move them in here for the last several days because nobody was there. I mean, you know, we couldn't get a license approved.
Governor Beshear, are you able to stay on the line for just another minute or so? I'm sorry, we need to take a short station break. And
sure,
we'll get right back with Governor Steve Beshear, and we want to invite our listeners to be part of the program. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Send an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We'll be right back. This is Eastern Standard on 88.9 WEKU. I'm John Hingsberg, and we're talking about the effects of the partial government shutdown on Kentucky. And with us on the line is Governor Steve Beshear. I'm so sorry for having to interrupt you, Governor. You were talking about a couple of instances that you cited yesterday where the state was harmed by the government shutdown. Please go right ahead.
Well, I mentioned that we couldn't move our folks into that new facility because we couldn't get it licensed. We also had a number of veterans whose benefits we couldn't process because our state veterans agency was not the named person for them. And so, you know, there was no way we could process these benefit applications. It's just one thing after another. And who knows the effect on the business world when here we have so many businesses that are poised to invest in the future of our state, to expand, to grow, to create more jobs. But then they look at a mess like we see in Washington, D.C., where they can't even agree on the time of day, much less on getting a budget and moving forward as a country. And, I mean, business hesitates, and I can't blame them. You know, the one thing that business wants is certainty. They need certainty. They need predictability so that if they're going to make a decision to invest $20 million in a new facility or $40 million and expand the plant, they need to have a feeling that things are being managed well and are running well. And good gracious, it's pretty hard for them to get the feeling about the federal government, that's for sure.
Governor, the legislation that was signed by President Obama last night reopens the government through January 15th and permits the Treasury to borrow normally through February 7th. You said you believe this deal kicks the can down the road. So what do you think is going to happen in the first part of the new year?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm glad they did it. At least we got by this crisis. But, you know, this management by crisis, this legislating by crisis to crisis is crazy. It's no way to do business. And who's to say that come January 15th, we're not going to be in the last day once again and maybe have a federal shutdown. And then February 7th, we're going to be coming up on defaulting on our debt again. I mean, this is no way to run a railroad. There's no way to run a government. They need to sit down and get their act together. They need to have a budget. They haven't had a budget up there in several years now because they can't agree on anything. I'll tell you something. You know, what I'm proud of is that Kentucky's one of the few places, I guess, left in the country where democracy still works. you know, we've got a Republican Senate. We've got a Democratic House. I'm a Democratic governor. But when the elections are over with here in Kentucky, we all remember that we're Kentuckians first and Democrats and Republicans second. And we act like adults. We sit down, we talk. Sure, we've got differences. But we know that if we're going to move our state forward, we've got to find the common ground. We've got to come together and make decisions on matters that will benefit our people. And so that's the way we conduct ourselves. We reach across the aisle. We work with each other. And it's high time that these folks in D.C. start acting like adults and do the same thing.
The Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, was, of course, at the center of the debate during the partial government shutdown. How do you feel about the Kentucky's system, Connect, that opened up on October the 1st?
Well, according to all reports from all over the country, our Connect, our system, our health benefits exchange here in Kentucky is the gold standard. I mean, it is working better than any other exchange in the country. I turned on NBC Nightly News Friday night, and there was a story about the federal exchange and the problems it was having. And then they said, but let me show you one that is excellent. And Kentucky popped up, and they talked about how we were doing for about 2 minutes on national television. You know, it's going great guns. We've had, just in the first 2 weeks, about 240,000 Kentuckians swarming all over that website and calling that toll-free number to find out about how to get affordable health care. We've been signing up people at the rate of about 1,000 a day. Now, you know, you don't really have to like the president. You don't have to like me. All I ask you to do is just go on there, make that call, sit down and talk to one of those connectors and find out how you might be able to get affordable health care for the first time in your life. We've got 640,000 Kentuckians that have never had affordable health care, and I'm determined to get it for them if we can do it. And this is a tool that will allow us to do that. 308,000 of those 640,000 will be covered by the expansion of Medicaid that we're doing. The other 332,000 will be able to find affordable health insurance through the exchange. So this is exciting for Kentucky's future. You know, a generation from now, we're going to have a workforce that is healthy, that is more productive, and we're going to be attracting a lot more business and jobs to our state.
Governor Fifi from Lexington emailed us. She writes, why does the Kentucky Health Exchange, which is outsourced to ACS in Lexington, pay less than $9 per hour and has less benefits than state workers? If this function had been used to create new state jobs, those employees would be state workers getting fair wages and better benefits.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what she's talking about. We've got a call center in Lexington that Xerox runs, and it's working. You know, we've got 100 employees there right now answering the telephones, and our lines are working well. You know, we try to outsource and use the private sector when we can to make things work, and this is a good example of that.
We have a note from Mike in Richmond. What would your plan be to set us on a path, and I'm not sure what he means by this, on a path to fiscal life? We are on an unsustainable path. We have a burden that is unsustainable and growing more so by the day. This is true on the federal and on the state levels. I assume you would disagree.
I would disagree, particularly on the state level. You know, we are required to balance our budget every year, and all states are, unlike the federal government. And so I have spent the last 6 years as governor balancing and making sure our budget balances as we've gone through the worst recession of our lifetimes. I've actually had to make cuts about 12 times over the last 5.5 years and rebalance our budget. But we've done it, and we did it not with a MEDAX approach of just cutting across the board. We prioritized, and we said education is the most important thing that we spend the tax dollar on. And so we're going to try to keep that whole as much as possible. And we've done that. We also prioritize public safety, because there's no more basic duty of a government than to keep their people safe in their homes and on their streets. And we prioritized economic development, because if we create more jobs, we get more of our people working, that will grow us out of the recession faster than anything.
Governor, I know we agreed to keep you only for 15 minutes or so, but let me ask you one more question. Where do we go from here? How do you feel that the federal government and, of course, in cooperation with the states, is going to move past what we just experienced in the last 2.5 weeks?
Well, I hope that this debacle that they just went through, and you know, everybody's reputation up there was ruined as far as I'm concerned. It'd be fine with me if we brought everybody home and started all over again. But I hope they learned a lesson here that doing crazy things like shutting down the government or not paying our bills because you don't get your way on one vote or the other is not the way that you run a government. You've got to sit down like adults and talk to each other, discuss your differences, and find common ground. That's the way this country has run ever since it was founded. That's what they've got to do. I know they've set up a bipartisan budget committee now that's supposed to start working on actually putting a budget together. I hope they take themselves seriously and don't just use this for more sound bites, you know, to run for office next year, and actually sit down and work some of these things out. This country desperately needs some collaboration and partnership instead of partisan confrontation.
Governor Steve Beshear, thank you for being part of this week's Eastern Standard. We hope to either get you into the studio or at least get you for a longer period of time at sometime in the near future.
Well, thanks for having me.
Governor Steve Beshear on this week's Eastern Standard. We are discussing the effects of the government shutdown on the state of Kentucky. Your comments about the effects of the shutdown on your own family, on your community, 800-621-8890. Send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. With us in the studio still is Mike Manjot, Travel Commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Travel and Tourism. You said that the state economy has been hurt by the shutdown of the federal facilities, the federal parks. List for me what was actually shut down.
Mammoth Cave National Park, which is one of our largest tourism attractions annually. It generates more than 2 million visitors a year. Pardon me, Cumberland Gap National Park in the eastern part of the state, Abraham Lincoln's birthplace in Hodgenville, and National Park was closed. We also had the, I'm going blank right now, some other national wildlife areas that were shut down. So, you know, those are areas that, and I said this earlier, that's money that is gone, that we're not going to recover. Many of those were out-of-state travelers coming down that either decided to stay home and not spend the money in the economy. Governor Beshear talked about business looking at the United States and the uncertainty that they have. Well, travelers are the same way. Travel is very important, obviously, from a rest and relaxation standpoint. You want to go somewhere where you know it's going to be safe, where you know you're going to be able to see everything you want to do. And that uncertainty had a major impact on us.
This is Eastern Standard, the effects of the government shutdown on Kentucky, the topic of our program this morning. We would like to hear from you at 800-621-8890. Send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We've had a number of interactions with listeners that some of the questions were pretty much repetitious of other issues and other questions that were raised. But please feel free if there's something that has not been answered, which, of course, is not directly to one of the guests who's no longer with us. We'd be glad to hear from you, again, especially your comments about the effects of the government shutdown. 800-621-8890, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Mike Manjot, regarding travel and tourism in the state, if the shutdown would have gone on longer than the almost 3 weeks that it had, was your agency preparing? Was there a plan? What would have to happen, or what would be the longer term negative effects?
Well, we were working. We'd already gotten the word out that all of the state parks, all of the other private attractions were open, and we did see a little bit of a pickup from that. Not a great deal, but we saw some, and really working on that. Now, you saw some states, New York, Arizona, I believe, Tennessee, and North Carolina agreed to go together and open their federal parks, the Great Smoky Mountains, for instance, Statue of Liberty, Grand Canyon. And they were basically sending the money to the federal government to do that. I know we were considering the possibility of doing something along those lines. However, there was no guarantee of reimbursement coming back from the federal government. And very frankly, we don't have the funds that would be available to do that for a sustainable length of time. So You know, we're glad it ended. Believe me, we're glad it ended. But again, if I can echo the governor, we hope we're not in this same situation come January and February, because that's the prime season for travelers looking to make their spring and summer vacation trips. So if many of our largest travel and tourism attractions are shut down, you know, that worries us. They may spend their dollars elsewhere.
How do those attractions affect the state in terms of its revenues? Do they bring in tax dollars, or is there some other way that they actually affect the well-being of the operations of the state?
Well, it's both. They certainly generate tax dollars and revenue for the state. They create jobs for the state. One of the great descriptions of travel and tourism I've ever heard was by a friend of mine in the economic development world that said, tourism is picking your pocket and making you smile about it. And if you think about that, it's all about people spending revenue and spending dollars and turning over. Travel and tourism also has one of the highest multipliers on the dollar. It turns over more times than many others. So everything you said, but really our mission is to bring people to Kentucky to generate revenue and create jobs. So the more attractions we have, the more people coming in, the more revenue, tax revenue, and jobs are being created.
Let's go to the phone. We do have Don from Lexington on the line. Don, thanks for calling in. We're discussing the effects of the government shutdown on Kentucky. Your opinion?
Yes. Yeah, I want to compliment the governor in particular on this Obamacare or well care. At the same time, I say that we really need Medicare for all and a control on the hospital industry, which is ludicrously driving everything up. And for great profit to those executives, as well as the insurance and pharmaceutical business. I'm really upset that we don't have people talking to another, including the governor. I mean, he's talking about partisan politics, which may be working a little in Kentucky, but in essence is not working nationally, and we aren't really listening to people outside the political frame, which are critical of some of the ongoings, both of the partisan politics and the governor. Energy, primarily, we need to discuss energy and sharing of work, not just creating work. We need to share our work instead of, you know, obsessing on, you know, buying more and having more.
All right,
that's
Don,
my comment.
Don, thank you so much for calling Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890. I do want to acknowledge an email we received yesterday, a fairly detailed email from Karen, who is a professor and director of the Center for Muscle Biology, the Department of Physiology at the University of Kentucky. And she basically said the government shutdown has exacerbated the significant challenges faced by the biomedical researcher community in this country. Research programs have shrunk because at best 10% of grant applications are funded, and the ones that are funded have significant budget cuts. But also as bad is the fact that bright new scientists have limited professional opportunities, so end up leaving science, so our ability to move new discoveries in healthcare forward has been significantly slowed. She said that there were numerous problems caused for her and her lab students, uncertainties in the budget, in the ability to operate as a result of the government shutdown. She said she has one federal grant application that we submitted in June that was to be reviewed on October 10th, and of course that did not happen. Karen from the UK, the Center for Muscle Biology, thank you for that detailed message. You will find that posted on our WEKU Facebook page, and of course you can interact with us or leave your comments on the Facebook page. We invite you to follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST. We still have a few moments if you'd like to get on board with a comment regarding the effects of the government shutdown on Kentucky, 800-621-8890. Mike Manchett, so we essentially will know at some point the effects of the shutdown on the state's economy. When will we know that, and how will we know that?
We'll see that show up next year in our economic impact analysis, which we will actually start working on that the first part, right after the first of the year. But the report takes a few months to pull all that together. It won't be available until May. We'll release that in mid-May. But we'll be able to look back year over year. You know, we were on track for a very good year this year. Travel and tourism was up. And as I said, October's a big month for the state of Kentucky. You've got the leaves changing. You've got Keeneland running. You've got the weather is normally outstanding. And we're known for our outdoor adventure, so people want to get out. And if you look at the national parks that really were impacted here, as I said, the Big South Fork and Cumberland Gap, and Mammoth Cave, Daniel Boone National Forest, all of those really appeal to the outdoor adventurer. So I expect a pretty significant drop from October to October.
Mike Manja, thank you for being with us in the studio today. We want to thank Governor Steve Beshear, Representative Andy Barr, former Representative Ken Lucas for being part of our program, as well as other guests who've been a part of this week's Eastern Standard on WEKU. Next week, Domestic Violence Treatment and Prevention in Kentucky. This is Domestic Violence Month. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our associate producers are Andrew Moorhead and Richard Turner. Our technical director today has been Roger Duvall. We've also had help from Charles Compton and Julie Tennell, who has been on the phones. A reminder, the show will be available online later today, and it will repeat on Sunday evening at 6. We're interested in hearing from you at any time, weku easternstandard@gmail.com. For WEKU and Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen.